You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time, and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern at 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and college hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago and host of the 312 Show on AM 1590 WCGO. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Text messages and voicemails, 331-979-1369, the place to hit us up. Drop us voicemails, your text messages, anything. Any thoughts on this Bulls team? Any reaction to tonight's Suns-Bulls game? Hit us up at 331-979-1369. Welcome back, Matt. Hopefully our listeners are enjoying all the guests that we've featured this week already. Ricky O'Donnell on Monday and The Athletic's Darnell Mayberry yesterday, talking about a variety of different things with this Bulls team so far. About a little bit more than 15 games in. On top of that, we've got Casey Johnson today. Casey Johnson's interview will happen at the back end of this episode. We wanted to make sure that at least we gave you guys a little bit of a Suns preview tonight. So that'll be today's first segment, and then on to Casey Johnson. But first and foremost, Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Hopefully everybody's gearing up for an enjoyable Thanksgiving holiday. I don't know about you. I'm heading down to Indianapolis. But just for the day, tomorrow, because we've got Bulls action tonight and more Bulls action on Friday. We get to see our old pal Dwayne Wade on Friday. But before that, a very winnable game against the Suns tonight.
Yeah, winnable indeed. And, you know, I tweeted this from our Locked On Bulls account. You may differ in opinion a little bit, but you know, it's been a tough week. It's been a tough week to watch this Bulls team and all the negativity flying around social media and the Bulls getting hammered on TV locally and nationally on the radio. You know, it'd be nice to pick up a win tonight. And I know you probably don't feel the same way with tank wins, but at the same time, like, anything more defeating than losing to the Phoenix Suns at home the night before Thanksgiving, I would say putting up an L tonight has to be rock bottom.
All depends on what you define as a win, Jordan. I would be okay with a win tonight. I would also be okay with a different kind of win tonight.
Honestly, you know, everybody talking about tanking and the Bulls need to stack up these L's, like, they're not going to be bad enough to get the number one pick. I'm sorry. I'm still going to stick to that. You know, with Markkanen done, Portis coming back for hopefully half the season, they're not going to be bad enough to get that number one pick. Cleveland Cavaliers are awful.
I agree with you, which is why they need to front load the losses now.
It's a good call. All right, let's take a look at this Phoenix Suns team right now. fronted by rookie number one overall pick DeAndre Ayton, along with Devin Booker. Both of those two players have played really well for the Suns team, but they haven't managed to find a way to actually pick up wins. I'm looking at two specific matchups, and that's Ayton versus Carter, and that's Booker versus LaVine. Two guys that are talked about constantly. I've brought up Devin Booker versus Zach LaVine multiple times on this show before. Similar players there. And then Ayton and Carter, who look like the two best big men to come out of that draft class, at least so far this season. So if for anything you're watching tonight's game, watch for those two matchups, because that could be a whole lot of fun if it's a scoring night for both Booker and LaVine, and Ayton and Carter are out on the floor battling it out. At least you got something to watch tonight with Suns and Bulls.
Yeah, I mean, two great matchups there. Of course, we're finally going to get to see the Booker versus LaVine showdown that you and I were talking about earlier this summer. LaVine actually having a higher points per game average than Booker right now coming into this game by a couple of points. Booker, of course, doing more of the assist work. I think he's averaging like 7.3, 7.4 assists per game. So he certainly edged LaVine there. But just as exciting as that is the other one you mentioned to me. It's Ayton and Wendell Carter Jr. with, we're probably going to see, hopefully, a revitalized LaVine after having a stretch of days off trying to get over that cold he was fighting. So they're probably going to look to get LaVine going early. But I also really would like to see Wendell get some offensive work going early in this game. We've seen some games this season where Fred tries to get Wendell established, giving him some looks in the post early on in the first quarter. And we've seen some games where Wendell is just basically non-existent on the offensive end, other than, you know, doing what he can to make the right pass and crash the boards a little bit. Ayton, of course, being asked to do a little bit more so far, and is, I believe, leading all rookies in rebounds at over 10 rebounds per game. So certainly you look at these two as the most exciting of the bigs that came out of that draft class, and they look to be like they have a higher impact on their teams than, say, Bagley has yet with the Kings, or Jared Jackson has with the Grizzlies. So I mean, I would love to see Wendell have like a 20-10 night. I know we haven't really seen that as a regularity this season, but I'd love him to take that DeAndre Ayton challenge head on.
I'd agree with that. And somebody else to be concerned with tonight, for the Suns at least, is TJ Warren. TJ Warren has been pretty damn good for the Suns this season, been their secondary scorer on top of Booker and Ayton. Like, Ayton doesn't put up a whole ton of shots. Most of the shots are going to Devin Booker. But Ayton's been pretty good at consistently scoring. You know, you look at his numbers, he's only got two games in which he had single-digit points. So I look for that, but TJ Warren's going to be another one that's going to give the Bulls some difficulty, because I'm trying to think of the guy tonight that's going to have to handle him on top of Devin Booker. And so if the Bulls are going to go and start Jabari Parker, that could get ugly. TJ Warren could be a guy that drops 20 or more tonight. And if he does that, the Bulls could be in some trouble, because I'm already assuming that Devin Booker is going to probably have 20 plus tonight. DeAndre Ayton's probably going to be in similar fashion, 15 to 20 tonight. So that X factor, TJ Warren, who can score from a lot of different places, trying to figure out who's going to switch on to him also is going to be a worry for me. But this Suns team, more so than this Bulls team, needs a win tonight, because they're struggling. And like I said before at the opening part of this episode, is that the Suns aren't trying to lose games this year. They're actually actively trying to win. And I don't know, Matt, how the Bulls are going to stop some of the wing play that the Phoenix Suns have with Ariza and Warren, and then Josh Jackson, too, coming off the bench. And then they've got their rookie, too, that we talked Mikhail about Bridges. A bunch yep, this yep. summer. And that's Mikhail Bridges. And he's been arguably one of the best rookies in this class so far, even just coming off the bench, both effective on the defense and offensive side. So a lot of wing play, a lot of weaknesses for the Bulls too, and they don't have the length to necessarily match up with
and
those
hey,
guys.
I mean, are we forgetting one of our favorite ex-Bulls, Isaiah Cannon? Come on now. Talk about some lethal shooting. I mean, whoa. I mean, this Suns team is probably better on paper than their three-win record right now. They have a lot of young talent. You mentioned Bridges, who, of course, was on our radar if the Bulls went with a wing instead of a big in the 2018 draft class. And Josh Jackson, who a lot of people have been expecting to take a big step forward this season after a kind of ho-hum rookie season, still only averaging 7 points per game, mostly as a rotational bench player. But, you know, it's if you're talking about depth, I would still confidently say that this Suns team has more depth than the Bulls do right now, which is not a hard test.
So the Bulls coming in tonight are the worst team in the NBA with offensive rating of 100.5 and score on average 103.1 points per game. The Suns aren't much better there, though. 101.7 offensive rating, that's 28th in the NBA, and their points per game averages at 102.8. So scoring slightly less than the Bulls are per game, the Phoenix Sun coming in the worst team in the NBA. So if there's anything to hope for tonight as far as getting the offense going, it's being able to score against a not very good, not very experienced Phoenix Suns team for this Bulls. But the thing is, it all comes down to, and I think this has been the common theme after every game, is like, okay, if Zach LaVine's not going to put up 25 points tonight, it's going to be awfully hard to win. So I can imagine that's going to be in the similar sense tonight at the United Center, is that you're going to need Zach LaVine to put up 25 or more, and then you're going to need help from Justin Holiday putting up 2 to 3 to 4 3-pointers. Like, so you're going to need to find another secondary score to go along with Zach LaVine, but I think that's going to be the focal point tonight if the Bulls want to hang around. And look, they should, because Phoenix, as much as we talk about Ayton and Booker, after that, it gets dicey. And they,
yeah, and one other person worth mentioning, and just because I half expect him to go off tonight and drop 30-plus, another ex-Bull, Jamal Crawford, who found his way to the Suns on his never-ending NBA career tour. I mean, he's been pretty quiet so far since joining Phoenix and playing a bench role, just 4.6 points per game. But we all know that Jamal Crawford, even at age 48 million, whatever he is, he's 38, he's capable of having those nights where he just is feeling it, his shot's falling, and he's looking to create as a part of that second unit. That's another thing that the Bulls will have their hands full with, is trying to prevent a Jamal Crawford kind of night.
I know Fred Hoiberg probably won't do this, but entertain me for a second. I'd like to see, so if these Phoenix Suns are going to go with a lineup that looks like Devin Booker, Mikal Bridges, Trevor Ariza, TJ Warren, DeAndre Ayton, I'd like to see the Bulls match it with Archie, Zach LaVine, Justin Holiday, Chandler Hutchison, and Wendell Carter Jr. Like, I don't know if Fred's going to toy with the idea because of matchup play, not starting Jabari tonight, but, I mean, I'd like to see Hutchison play over Parker tonight in those types of matchups, just because I told you before, top of Ayton and Booker, you've got problems with not only Bridges, but you also have to cover up TJ Warren, too, so maybe if the Bulls are looking to find a spark here, they bring Jabari off the bench, because the offense hasn't been great either. It's been stagnated, and when Parker and LaVine are on the floor, things seem to just stop. It's all isolation play. So maybe Fred toys with the idea of bringing Parker off the bench and let Chandler Hutchison have the opportunity to start tonight.
I don't see it. I think Jabari's going to start. I don't disagree with your logic there, and I certainly wouldn't mind. I think Jabari played better when he was coming off the bench and leading that second unit, but I think Fred's going to stick with what he has right now. I think he's not too impressed with Chandler Hutchison at the moment.
Dude, let's get on to our interview with Casey Johnson. So make sure to follow him on Twitter at @KCJHoop. All of his content over at the Chicago Tribune. He does great work there. So without further ado, here's Casey Johnson.
Right now, we're very pleased to welcome back to Locked On Bulls one of our favorite guys to talk to. He is Casey Johnson, longtime Bulls reporter for the Chicago Tribune. Get all of his great Bulls content by getting a subscription to the Trib, reading all of his stuff. Follow him on Twitter at @KCJHoop. Casey, welcome back to the pod, man. You looking forward to a Thanksgiving with no Bulls basketball tomorrow?
I just am happy to be home. Oftentimes they're on the circus trip at this time of year. I've spent many Thanksgiving on the road, so it's nice to have home games, you know, around Thanksgiving and see if the Bulls can reverse their fortunes, which have not been very good of late.
Yeah, speaking of somebody who might have a trickier things I'm thankful for list this year is Denzel Valentine, who suffers a setback, announced on Monday that I believe they called it ongoing ankle instability, instead of what we thought initially was just a sprained ankle. And, you know, Denzel's had ankle issues in the past. The initial timeline for return kept getting pushed back and pushed back. Lo and behold, now it's 4 to 6 months, all but assuredly ending his season. Casey, what is your initial reaction to this news and the way that Denzel's injury developed?
Well, I mean, I know everybody, you know, there's a hue and cry when the goal line, the goalposts keep getting shifted. But I mean, if you look at what was said, they did say, I mean, nobody thought it would get to this, but they did say initially 1 to 2 weeks he'd be reevaluated. So at that point, he was reevaluated and it moved from a sprained ankle to a bone bruise. We all know a bone bruise is more serious. So, you know, the bone bruise sidelined him more indefinitely. They didn't really give us a timeline at that point. He actually at one point was pretty close to returning, was doing quite a bit of on the court stuff. And then had another setback. And, you know, that's when they again said it was indefinite. And then, you know, John Paxson, when the Bulls were in New Orleans, I actually was not on that trip, but told reporters that, you know, he would be sidelined indefinitely. And then ultimately visited the specialist who just said, look, you can try to keep, you know, piecemeal this together or we can reconstruct your ankle. And this is a guy who has done so for Steph Curry. You know, the Bulls have to hope that it follows a similar, you know, path that Steph Curry, you know, obviously had a lot of ankle issues early in his career, no longer has them. Taj Gibson had reconstructive ankle surgery and worked well for Taj, different surgeon, but, you know, hopefully the Bulls can have the same result for Denzel. You hate to see it for a guy who's going into a third season that, you know, was putting a lot of work in over the summer and was looking forward to kind of building on the progress he made from year one to year two. So tough break for Denzel and tough break for the Bulls.
As bad as the news is for him, I thought he took it pretty well, though. Just seeing videos from his reaction yesterday to reporters answering questions, he seemed in pretty good spirits. So talking about how he thinks he's for the first time will actually be fully healthy, being able to play at 100% on a fully healthy ankle. He said it's been kind of in a lingering issue since he was a rookie. So were you surprised at all that he was kind of, you know, not as down as maybe one would think or Bulls fans would think, thinking that his season's going to be over? And what's the timetable as far as his return? And if they're barring no setbacks, he would start this summer to work out and build back for next year. But overall, what was his reaction yesterday?
Yeah, I would agree with you. I thought it was pretty upbeat. I think he kind of sees what we just talked about, is that, you know, here's a situation where he's had lingering issues, and he even had the line where, you know, who knows if I've even been 100% healthy since I've been in the NBA. And so I think he needs to recognize this was a hard decision to make when he sit out, you know, a year of, you know, all NBA players have a short window for their careers, and a full season is not an easy pill to swallow, but he's looking at it more for, you know, the long-term future and long-term decision to better his career. So I think he just accepted the fact it's a hard decision, but ultimately he thinks he's going to, you know, see positives out of it. You know, the Bulls said 4 to 6 months. At this point, you know, you do have to take all their timelines with a grain of salt. you know, even if it's at 7 months, let's say, because he's going to have the surgery in late November. So let's just for fun say 7 months. That's late June. So he's going to have, you know, 3 months from the time that you know, the back end of that timeline to the start of training camp. So, you know, they do think he's going to have a pretty normal off season of rehab and training. So, you know, like I said, I think I looked it up yesterday. Taj Gibson played 73, 78, and 82 games in the three seasons since he had his ankle reconstructed. So the Bulls have to hope for a similar outcome with Denzel.
Well, we'll certainly hope so. Let's move to something that has certainly been a brighter subject for Bulls fans so far this season. That being, of course, the play of rookie Wendell Carter Jr. I mean, we have seen this kid at age 19 thrown in the deep end, put into the starting role when really most offseason and into training camp, people thought it would be Robin Lopez, the veteran, starting. Wendell starts. He's being asked to guard early in the season. Guys like, you know, the Twin Towers in Detroit, you know, Drummond and Griffin. He's had to go up against Nikola Jokic. He's had to go up against Anthony Davis. And hey, here we get on tonight's slate, a Wendell versus DeAndre Ayton matchup. Ayton, of course, being the number one overall pick and one of the other highly touted bigs in that draft class. Casey, what part of Wendell's game are you most pleasantly surprised by so far?
You know, there's a lot to choose from there. I think the biggest aspect of his game, I don't even know if surprise is the right word. Because everybody talked about how good his defensive instincts were. You know, his offense has probably exceeded what you might have expected. He looks very comfortable at that end as well. But I guess I would just go to the level of the defensive sophistication. I mean, this is a guy who seems to have already mastered the, you know, defensive 3 seconds rule. And you know, he said he learned from Robin Lopez the art of tagging an opponent and stepping out of the lane to reset the clock on that, and just his ability to challenge shots at the rim without drawing fouls. I mean, he had foul trouble, you know, obviously in that opener against Embiid and the Sixers, but since then it's happened maybe one or two other times. But for how often he's challenging shots and how often he's making defensive plays, it hasn't been as much of an issue as you might have thought. And that's remarkable for any rookie, much less one who's 19. So I think that's probably the biggest thing that jumps out. And then, you know, recently there's been a little bit of a buzz about, you know, his off the court presence and how he has not been afraid to speak his mind, which I think is a good sign for, you know, a young player who's joining a young team. He's obviously very intelligent. I mean, it's well documented his two choices for college were Duke and Harvard. And he's just someone who's, when you're around him, you just see how much substance he has to him. I mean, not only the way he plays the game, but just the way he sees the game and the way he talks about the game. So it's, you know, still early, but there's a lot to like there so far for Bulls fans.
Following up on you know, him being outspoken about leadership and a voice, since Dunn and Portis haven't been in the lineup for now almost a month, around about a month or so, you know, we get mixed reaction from fans to some saying that they don't like the idea that a rookie's stepping up and speaking his mind. He might feel entitled. I don't get that sense from Wendell, and just the way listening to him talk and listening to his post game, and even going back to, you know, when he was asked about not having a voice in that locker room or on the floor, and it starts, and is it a single person that needs to step up? With this roster being so young, do you feel he can be that voice, and are guys starting to gravitate towards that, or are they kind of reflecting it and pushing it off and saying, you're just a rookie, you don't know really what you're talking about, or are they kind of embracing that role from Wendell?
Yeah, I think the point that you make is a good one, is that just, and I said it earlier, it's just such a young team that I think you just have to accept that. I love what Zach LaVine said when he was asked about it. He said, look, this guy's going to be here a long time. So, you know, and it's not like Zach LaVine is this, you know, aged veteran either. So, you know, when you're, this is reflective of a rebuild. When you have a rebuild, you're looking for people to step into leadership roles. And I agree with you that in Portis and Dunn, the Bulls have lost two of their more talkative presence. I would add Denzel in that group. You know, I've actually been pointing out on Twitter recently how much Denzel is valued within the locker room or organizationally for his leadership skills. And most people have kind of intimated that's coming from, you know, it's respected by management and the coaches. That's coming from teammates. Teammates respect Denzel and his work ethic and his leadership. So the Bulls have lost three pretty significant leadership pieces with Portis, Dunn, and Valentine. And I know they're still around, but it's different, obviously, when you're playing in the trenches. So, you know, I think the fact that Carter's recognized that and is comfortable in that role is a good thing for the Bulls. And, you know, it's funny you bring up, you know, are people resenting it? The example that comes to mind, and it's amazing that we're talking about another Duke guy, is when Jay Williams came here, you know, as a rookie way back in the early aughts, and you know, Jalen Rose just did not, those two guys, it's funny, they work on ESPN together now, and they have a good relationship now, because they were just completely oil and water. There was a lot of pushback from Jalen Rose. He, you know, I think it was a Michigan-Duke thing a little bit too, and Jalen would kind of just arch an eyebrow at a lot of what Jay said. And in fact, Jay had a pretty similar comment at one point about, you know, huddling up on the court. You know, I know it's a big college basketball and Duke thing, and Jalen was like, is this guy crazy? I mean, this is the NBA. We don't do that in the NBA. So it's funny that kind of history is repeating itself, but it's a different situation. And Wendell's comments are going over much more smoothly than Jay Williams' comments did.
Yeah, I mean, and I mean, Casey, you mentioned that. It also makes me think back to when Joakim was a rookie and not a quiet rookie. And there were some people on that team that took issue with that at times. So it's nice to hear that for the most part, Wendell's teammates are embracing the fact that he's speaking up and trying to play a leadership role, even at his tender age of 19. As we're talking about leadership here, as we talk with Casey Johnson, who covers the Bulls for the Chicago Tribune, Casey, I always get baffled by this thing where is it too much for a 19-year-old to be a vocal leader on this team? This team is very young. Who's the leader? Who's the leader? And then we all say, oh, by the way, yeah, what's Fred's role in all of this? How is Fred leading this young team? And not just in X's and O's on the court kind of way, because we have seen some proof of growth from Fred in that regard. And he's certainly doing the best he can with a very limited supplies in the first 20 or so games of this season. Do you have a sense that Fred has a strong voice in that locker room and a strong voice on the sidelines? Because when Wendell is saying, we come out of a timeout, we don't stick together as a team, we all go our separate ways. My eyes wander towards Fred and him being partly responsible for a young team that's not really playing together, and a young team that might be outmanned on paper, but shouldn't be out hustled, and a team that is getting outperformed when it comes to things like energy on a nightly basis. Do you think that Fred deserves some culpability there?
Well, I think the energy thing is something that I would focus on, and I've written as such, is that I think we would all agree that for the most part last season, in a season when the Bulls were trying to lose games, they ended up winning 27 games. And I think most would agree that for the majority of those games, if not, I don't know what played 90%, they outplayed or at least had an equal energy and effort to their opponent. And so I thought Fred really, really showed great signs in that department last season. He mentioned that as a preseason goal this season, and I think we would all agree that there have been 5 embarrassing losses to this point. So, you know, that obviously falls, it's a shared blame thing, but that falls some on the players and it falls some on the coaching staff. It is the coaching staff's job to prepare the team to play and to hold players accountable. I think, Fred, there have been some examples, some high-profile examples of him trying to hold players accountable. The one where he called timeout and challenged he walked into the court to challenge Jabari Parker after Jabari failed to hustle back on transition defense. There's another time where Zach LaVine got back cut and he called timeout and kind of went out on the court to kind of start, you know, talking to Zach about that situation. So there are examples of it, but yeah, overall, I don't think Fred and the staff are having the same success with outworking the other team or outworking the opponent as they did last season. And you just see it in those losses. Some of those losses are just, to me, unacceptable. But the Warriors one drew so much attention just because it was so extreme. I mean, any time, obviously, you scored 90 or allowed 92 first half points, and it let Klay Thompson set an NBA record for 3-pointers, it's going to be alarming. But my basketball sensibilities were actually more offended by that road Charlotte loss. I just saw a team that just didn't seem engaged at all. And you know, the Warriors are going to go down as one of the greatest dynasties in league history. The Hornets are not. So, you know, there have just been nights where it's just been head scratching. And it is something that I think needs to change between now and the end of the season for Fred and the staff. And also, I think getting obviously some of these players back will help in that regard.
See, that's always curious to me, too, because I go back to the Warriors' loss to the blowout embarrassment at home. You get smacked in the mouth, and then the Bulls came back and had a nice stretch. I thought, you know, even though they lost that game in overtime to the Nuggets, they played them well with high energy and high level. Same thing with the Pacers loss, you know, within 2 points there. And I always have to preface this with, you're missing main core pieces of your team. So to do that and get the energy out of a lot of guys who frankly don't have a lot of experience in this team says something about Fred Hoiberg in a positive light. You know, but then the blowout losses also say something. So it's kind of been a mixed bag. I'm curious, though, going towards his point guard situation that he's got right now, between Shaq Harrison, between Ryan Arcidiacono and Cameron Payne, what's been the sense now? Has Fred maybe grown more accustomed to giving Shaq Harrison an opportunity and not playing Cameron Payne? I know that we saw him start because Zach LaVine was out, but is Fred Hoiberg kind of lost on Cameron Payne now? Did he do that as an opportunity to say, hey, you're not playing good enough to play, so we're going to give guys other guys opportunities? So what's going on with the point guard situation, and is it going to be similar going forward until Dunn gets back, or is Cameron Payne going to find an opportunity again?
I mean, yeah, I haven't asked lately. I mean, obviously Cameron had the opportunity because Zach was sick, and Fred explained it as such that he wanted to keep guys in their roles. But, you know, I don't see anything with the way Archie Diacono or Harrison have played that would make him change the point guard rotation. So with Zach coming back from illness, I would expect it to be Archie Diacono and Harrison and Payne out of the rotation. You know, Payne had a great opportunity. I mean, it was gift wrap for him with Dunn out, and he was starting and playing regular minutes, and it just, you know, he just didn't run with it. I thought, you know, it's all relative, but I thought Payne actually played pretty well down the stretch of last season. I'm not saying he knocked the lights out or anything like that, but he certainly, to me, showed he can be he showed he could be a possible rotation piece. And then it just looks like this season, with the opportunity that was given to him, he didn't build on that. And he's really got nobody to blame. I mean, the opportunity was there for him. And it was clear that Fred was more comfortable with Archie Diacono, mostly because coaches like to have consistency and they like to know what they're going to get. And, you know, Archie Diacono, say what you want about his limitations, you know what you're going to get from him. And it's been borne out more often than not, you know, every game this season. So I certainly think the point guard rotation will remain the same with Archie as a starter and Harrison as the backup until Dunn gets back. But, you know, that Dunn's injury is to me really critical. I think a lot of people honed in on this before the season, you know, that he was probably the player the Bulls could at least afford to lose to injury. And, you know, obviously he had some high-profile weird injuries last season and wasn't able to stay on the court very consistently, and him being out to start the season, I think, is really set this team back, because he's obviously the best individual defender in the starting five, and then also you know, is so important the way the Bulls need to play offensively. So he's not the most gifted offensive player, that's obviously LaVine or Markkanen, but he's so critical to the way they need to play that his loss to me has been, you know, it's not the biggest, one of the biggest.
All right, Casey, we have reached the point in today's show where we have to talk about the elephant in the room. And no, that is not a fat joke. I'm talking about Jabari Parker. He has been such a polarizing figure since making his return to Chicago. You know, some Bulls fans wanting to say, hey, give the guy a chance. He looked pretty good in that playoff series against Boston last year, and he's coming off two ACLs. You got to temper your expectations. And some saying, I can't believe we signed this guy, and I can't believe they thought he was worth $20 million. Who in the heck were they bidding against? Because it certainly didn't seem like they were bidding against the Bucks. From the perspective of someone who's following this team, Fred obviously has done more to say, you know, I'm going to put the best players on the floor, and I'm going to put the best lineups on the floor that I think give me chances to win. And essentially just ignored the advice of his bosses, who said, Jabari's coming here and he's a great fit. We're going to play him at the three. And Fred took what? I don't know, a couple practices in training camp to say, no, Jabari can't play the three, so we're going to pull him off the bench and he's going to play the four. I mean, do you have any sense so far that the front office is still trying to believe in Jabari being a good idea? Or do you think they have already come around to the realization that this was a 1 year commitment financially? They have the team option, and this experiment is another one that didn't really work out, and they're getting ready to move on. Do you have any sense that they have arrived at a conclusion either way yet?
No, but I mean, look, you know, John and Gar have been around NBA basketball their whole lives. So, I mean, they see what we see. So, I mean, I haven't asked how they feel about it or if they may come to a definitive conclusion. But look, they said publicly that their expectations for the signing are very, very clearly stated. They said, look, we recognize it's not the right fit, but we're not in a position in our rebuild to judge fit. We're just trying to grab talent or assets and see what works and what doesn't. And then obviously the way they structured the contract, you know, bears that out. So he has drawn, it has been a highly scrutinized signing, obviously. And it's obviously been way more negatively received than positively received. What I would say is, it's a short-term commitment. It looks like it's only going to be 1 year at this point. And I still personally want to see how Jabari fits if they get healthy. I want to see how he fits alongside Dunn, Levine, Markkanen. Now, you know, with him playing the four now, you'd have to have Markkanen playing the five in that lineup. But I certainly think that'll be a lineup that they try at some point, all four of those guys, and then probably a Justin Holiday or what have you. So I still want to see that. I'm not saying you're going to see enough of a sample size of that to justify the signing or make it last beyond a year, but, you know, that's still out there. He's obviously, you know, not played very well at the defensive end to this point of the season. And offensively, for my taste, his points have mostly come in a vacuum and off isolation. He's clearly a gifted scorer. He has stretches where he, you know, slashes back and just can put the ball in the basket. But it just hasn't really, to me, impacted winning too much to this point very much. So, you know, at this point, I would guess it'd be a one-year signing, but, you know, management's not going to come out and say that.
Casey, I want to shift our focus to Zach LaVine really quick. I'm curious, have you talked to any other opponents? You know, the Bulls have got a pretty decent sample size with a lot of NBA stars already this season. The Bulls' schedule has been pretty difficult. Have you been surprised by any comments? Has anybody made comments about Zach LaVine's play around the league from players? Players, have they been put on notice a little bit? Because I think Bulls fans knew he was going to come back healthy and be good, but I don't know if they knew he was going to be this good this quickly offensively. So is anybody, any other players that you've talked to from opponents said anything about Zach LaVine that is, you know, kind of eye-opening or at least being put in the conversation of some of the best in the NBA so far?
Well, I mean, I think everybody just understands that he's an incredibly gifted scorer and incredibly athletic, and he's just obviously he's regained that form. I mean, ACL injuries take, you know, a full year, if not longer, to really be back. And, you know, last season he talked about how he was, you know, coming back off of an off-season of rehab, not off of an off-season of basketball. So, you know, I know a lot of fans kind of tuned him out or didn't think that he'd get back to the level that he did or looked at his play and called it disjointed or what have you. But, you know, there were still stretches there where, I mean, he was putting up 20-point games even though he wasn't jumping, you know, he wasn't jumping the way he jumped before the injury and showing the athleticism and the pop that he had before the injury. So, There was a very strong belief internally, not only from Zach's camp but also the Bulls camp, that he was going to you know, regain the same athleticism he had before the ACL tear, and that's why they obviously matched the Kings offer sheet. But I think the sense you're getting around the league is just that this is who he was, you know, in that last season in Minnesota before he tore the ACL. And that's why at the time he was, you know, considered a player on the rise. And that's why the Bulls identified him as one of the main pieces they wanted to get in that trade. You know, he still needs to become more of a complete player. And he also, I think he's shown growth in this department as far as making the right decision and taking better shots. But he still needs to show, you know, more consistency of that. At this point, you also have to say to yourself, I mean, there's got to be times where even though he's getting double teamed, he's like, who the heck am I going to pass it through? You know? So, he's had a great start to the season. And you know, I expect it to, you know, his scoring output may drop a little bit, but I expect his overall effectiveness to continue, if not improve, once some of these other, you know, scoring options come back.
All right, Casey, we'll let you get out of here on this one. There's been a lot of talk around Chicago about Fred Hoiberg and his level of job security, whether or not he's on a hot seat with this depressing start to the season, 4-12, 4-13, whatever they are. You know, Jordan mentioned they've certainly had a difficult schedule, and of course now dealing with all these injuries and being shorthanded. You know, we heard from Paxton before the season started as far as how he would be evaluating Fred Hoiberg, as you know, with his coaching performance this season, and it was not necessarily tied to wins and losses. Still, though, there seems to be this growing sentiment that he could be a guy who was used as a scapegoat. They could be asking Fred to fall on his sword for them if this season albeit limited with injuries and all that, does not go the way they were expecting it to. Because they said this is not going to be another season like the one we had last year. We don't want that. AKA, the plan was not to tank again this year. At least publicly, that's what they were saying. So, I mean, I'll just like, let's phrase it this way. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being like brain exploding emoji, how surprised would you be if Fred Hoiberg gets canned before the season is over?
Well, you're probably going to have to book John Paxson for your next podcast to get the full answer to that. But you're asking me how close. So 10 would be brain exploding if he's fired before the end of the season, and 1 would be, oh, yeah, but, that doesn't surprise me, right?
Right, exactly.
I mean, look, I'll answer that in a second, but I'll say this. I mean, at Media Day, we were asking about his job security. So this is not like some big secret. I mean, his job security was an open topic on Media Day, the day before training camp started. I mean, this was a huge storyline going into the season. And, yes, they've had awful injuries, and they've gotten off to a rough start. And only management can determine, you know, what the breaking point is. So I have no idea if it's going to happen. But if it does happen, I'm not going to be surprised at all. I was asking at Media Day about his job security on September 24th. So the fact that they're, you know, losing a lot and fans seem disgruntled with Fred, again, only management knows the answer to it. But I personally am not going to be surprised at all. You know, I personally think, you know, Fred is, it's been pretty well documented that Fred's had a tough go, and the expectations and the, have changed on him since he's been here, and the rosters always haven't been the right fit. And it's just been one kind of underwhelming and difficult thing after another since Fred's been here. But I personally think if you fired him now, it'd be unfair just because of the injuries. But look, that's certainly management's prerogative. I personally think, you know, him maybe getting to the end of the season and then you determine whether or not he's going to come back for his fifth would be a better way to look at it. But again, only management can answer whether or not they get so frustrated they pull the trigger. But if it happens, like I said, it's been a storyline since the jump. So I'm not going to be surprised at all.
So just a quick follow up there. It's, you know, you said you, in your opinion, it would be unfair to let Fred go before he gets some of these pieces back. If you were running this team, does that mean that you would want to see what Fred can do with a healthy Markkanen, Dunn, Levine, and, you know, Bobby as a sixth man playing together before deciding that he was a problem that needed fixing with this young group?
And Carter, you know, I mean, you've added Carter. I mean, this is the second season of a full rebuild. I think we'd all agree, maybe not, but I personally feel like last season was Fred's best season as coach, right? So that was with the first season of a full rebuild and a not fully healthy Zach LaVine. So they played 12 games in 255 minutes together. I'm not saying, you know, Fred is Greg Popovich. I'm just saying you gave this guy 5 years and $25 million. So, you know, if that's who you identified to be the answer for 5 years and, you know, 5 guaranteed years and $25 million of guaranteed money, and then you make a decision to fully rebuild, don't you kind of want to see what he can do with these toys and these pieces? Again, that's just my opinion. Management can do whatever it wants, and I certainly am not going to be surprised if they pull the trigger before the end of the season, given that we were asking about it before training camp. But I don't know. I'd like to see a fully healthy Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, Lauri Markkanen, and Wendell Carter Jr. in Fred's offense. Because this another storyline that was written consistently was this is the first time Fred had a roster that kind of fit how he wants to play. And we haven't seen it yet because it's all been injured. So, you know, there's always a lot of intrigue every season. That's the biggest storyline, you know, going into camp season. And, you know, it's kind of been on hold because of the injuries and people's frustration and disenchantment has just been growing over Fred. I get it. We'll continue to monitor it. It's certainly a storyline ongoing throughout the season, but I'd like to see Fred get a chance with all those guys fully healthy.
Just a quick follow-up on that. I'm kind of in the camp with you. I'd rather I'd at least give him a shot with the guys that are fully healthy. You know, I listened back to Media Day, and the opening statement by John Paxson was, you know, for the first time, we're actually fully healthy going into camp. And for the first time, we actually have some depth on this team. And both of those haven't turned out necessarily to be the case now. Injuries have happened, and the depth doesn't look as nearly as good as it did if you were fully healthy. So I'm totally in the camp with you too, Casey, that I'd at least like to see a chance for Fred Hoiberg to get all of those guys fully healthy and see what he can do and let the chips fall where they may. But I'm with you. I don't think I'm that surprised, but I'd at least like to see a chance, given that this season is about development, player development. You're not going to the playoffs, so give the guy at least a shot while you have him.
Yeah, and that's what I wrote something over the weekend. It was like, to me, it's a really, really – I get, like, how ugly these losses are and the record's bad, and I get how angry everybody is, and it's still Fred, and it's still Garpax, and fire everybody. I understand all that. But to me, this has just been an impossible season to judge because of the injuries. And I'm not making excuses for it or, you know, pushing it off. I'm just saying, how do you judge this? I mean – people are getting mad at Antonio Blakeney. I mean, that's just me just wasted energy. It's like the dude is like just trying to stay in the league. You know, it's like, and you're right. You bring up a good point, Jordan, about the depth. You know, that was a storyline going into the season. To me, on paper, it looked like they had a legitimate 9-10 man rotation, albeit some untested parts. But you would look like you're going to be one or, you know, two deep in almost every position. And the injuries have just thrown everything out of whack. And the line I keep using is that, like, players are now playing roles for which they're just not equipped. And so that makes everybody look bad. And that's what, to me, is why it's so hard to judge this season. But look, you know, I've covered two Christmas Eve coach firings, so anything can happen. You never know. You never know if the manager will just get so frustrated with it all that they launch Fred. But I just think it's going to be – I think it's the most fair thing to do, given that you identified this guy as a five-year coach, is to give him at least, you know, I don't know, two months with all these guys fully healthy. So we're talking into January, February. So we'll see if that happens.
Yeah, you never know, Casey. As you said, like, sometimes the Bulls front office just gets in that holiday spirit and feels like firing somebody. So we'll see if Fred makes it through the holidays. As it pertains to you, we always appreciate you stopping by the podcast. We appreciate your time. I'm happy for you that you actually get to be not on a circus trip for Thanksgiving this year. What will you be filling up your plate with the most tomorrow at a big Thanksgiving meal?
Well, with the risk of boring listeners too much, I'm not a big meat eater, so I will probably
you just lost some points turkey. In my book, Casey. Come on now.
but who doesn't like the old green bean casserole and the sliced baked potatoes? Right. So there's my carbs right there.
Absolutely. That's a good answer. Favorite pie? Are you like pecan? You pumpkin? Apple?
I like them all, and my sister makes them all, so I get a little slice of all. But if you tell me I got to pick one, I'm going with pumpkin.
I'm with you there.
Okay.
All right, Casey, have a good one. Enjoy that Bulls Suns game tonight. Who knows? Maybe you'll be writing about a win later tonight.
Probably not, but thank you for
having me. All right, man. Everybody, you should be following Casey on Twitter at @KCJHoop. He's got a great mailbag piece that he put out earlier today. Go read that. Follow him for all of his great Bulls coverage throughout the season. Casey, happy Thanksgiving, man. Appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for
having me, guys. Take it easy. See you guys.
All right, take care.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Want to thank our guest, Casey Johnson, for hopping on the show. You can follow him on Twitter at @KCJHoop. All of his Bulls content over at the Chicago Tribune. Read him. He does fantastic work. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Be back for a fresh episode on Friday, but don't miss it. Thursday, Thanksgiving, you're traveling. We've got an episode for you. It's going to be a full mailbag episode, so we'll be back tomorrow. And a bonus episode for you and a fresh episode on Friday. So for Matt Peck, Jordan Malley, wishing you guys a happy Thanksgiving. Go Bears, and we'll see you on Friday.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com